Kia ora, te aloha, hi, and welcome to Tanarumanga's Team Talk, proudly sponsored by Victual, New Zealand's first health and wellbeing supplement that combines ancient Māori and Pacifica wisdom and ingredients. And my guests this afternoon, all the way from Australia, Sydney, Australia, he was a finalist of the 1995 Singapore Cricket Club 7 tournament with a mighty Petone Rugby Club team that I was fortunate to be a part of. He debuted for Hong Kong Rugby National Rugby Team in 1998 and played his last test in 2005. And he and his wife, Selena, opened the first UFC gym in 2013 in Sydney, Australia, and are now co-owners of Crunch Fitness and have 18 gyms across New South Wales and Victoria with 75,000 members. Surely. And he and his wife worked with some of the biggest names in movies and health and fitness, and I look forward to hearing his stories on how we arrived to where we are today. Luciano Afuaki, surely it's good to catch up. It's been a long time.
Absolutely, it has been a long time. And, just getting on this, first of all, I'm very humbled and honoured to be one of your guests. I've listened to most of your guests so far, and when you're introducing them, I went, "Oi, Soli, are you sure you want me to be on this thing?"
Oh, 100%, man. You got the text. You got it early, Just trying to find time in your busy schedule to nail you down. I know, as I've read out, you're a busy man. You're a busy man. So I really appreciate your time this afternoon. So,
very, very welcome. And before we get started, I just want to congratulate you on what you're doing. I know as a fellow Pacifica, it's not in our comfort zone to do this kind of stuff, but good on you for doing it. And obviously watching your journey from our good old Wellington days to where we are today and what you've done, awesome stuff. And always been supporting your journey from wherever I was in the world.
Yes, you have. You've always kept in touch, and we've always kept in touch, which has been, obviously very, very humbling and great for me. And, as you said, we've come from the Hutt Valley. You were on that side of the hill, and I was on the other side of the hill in Wanuamata. So, and now you've traveled the world with business, but, let's talk about a little of your upbringing and, okay, we can mention St. Bernard's if you want to, but.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Wow. It's, definitely been a journey. Obviously, born in Tonga and of Tongan parents. The name kind of got a lot of people going, "How did you get Luciano or Luciano as a Tongan?" I'm like, good question. That's a whole nother story. But got to Petone in the Hutt Valley there at the age of 7. And I just couldn't believe how cold it was. I think that's the memory of how come I've moved from this warm place to this fridge. It was definitely a learning, steep learning in how to deal with temperatures. You look back now and growing up where I grew up was just probably the best place, obviously moving to New Zealand and learning the language was, that kind of had ramifications later on in life. And we'll probably talk to that later on in the interview. But, I look back now and, there was a great, great childhood, heaps of places to run, heaps of other kids on the street that you could go and play with. And obviously grew up with, John and Martin Leslie that lived around the corner. They always had a rugby ball. Andy's place was, I think Andy Leslie's house was just a center for all the friends to get to. And Wolford School before, getting to St. Bern, Wolford School was, brought out a bit of talent there, rugby-wise. Alex Talia was running around the field there. Marty and John, obviously. Inoke and Stanley, my two younger brothers, grew up there. I think we had like Mike Clamp as a teacher at one stage. Yeah. And I'm sure Alan Hewson went to Wolford School. But, I don't want to throw out any facts that are not correct there. But, you know, his dad was a headmaster, I think, of Petone Central. So, yeah, Petone was a huge kind of place for me growing up. You know, obviously parents work close by in factories and so forth. And, you know, memories you talked about, you know, going to St. Bernard's College, that was a big one, you know, going to an all-boys Catholic school. And I guess with yourself living in Wainuiomata, there was a lot of boys that came over from Wainuiomata, I think probably two busloads every day. So I'm sure some names would pop up from the Wainuiomata days and St. Bernard's days.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, a lot of fond memories, a lot of great memories growing up in the Hutt Valley.
Well, you've just mentioned all the legends of Petone Rugby, haven't you? It was a great club to start and be a part of. I came over from Wainuiomata to play with my brother and with yourself, and also, you know, I played age group rugby. I think me and Enoke, you know, I think we were 10 years old when we first played in our first rep team together. You know, and you know, we obviously went all the way through the grades as we grew up. And I remember your parents always there supporting.
always.
Yeah, you know, and I never, what I loved about your parents, always positive. Always positive. That's what I remembered, you know. I always gave my father a hard time when my mum a hard time, you know, getting, if I didn't play well, I definitely knew about it, you know. And but, you know, that's the tough love that they talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now, Dad was an avid, you know, rugby supporter, I guess, from his, you know, days of playing himself and playing in that red jersey for the Galitahi back in the early 70s. You know, it was huge for him. And then obviously watching his sons come through the ranks, you know, Petone Rugby Club, you know, you grew up and, you know, that was, you know, what you did, you know, in Petone, you know, played on the weekends. And I still remember running around in bare feet, you know, and playing half field and the morning dew. So, you know, and the kids got around, but yeah, you're right, you know. You know, Jason O'Halloran's running around with you. There was, yeah, Petone, as they said, you know, the home of champions, on the scoreboard, on the number one field, and you felt like a champion, you know. You hung out with all these kids, and then you saw, you know, obviously, you know, photos on the club rooms of All Blacks and, you know, championship photos. So you were just like, okay, what a great club to be in and involved in. So,
I think that real community, isn't it? Feel of club rugby back then. You know, that's what I remember. You know, everyone goes back to the club. You know, you enjoy everyone. Hears about how everyone played. You know, the captains get up and speak about their game, and you hear everyone done. And you know, it's probably something that, I don't know what it's like in Australia at the moment, but something that's probably dying out a little bit. We hear a lot about it, the grassroots games dying, numbers are dwindling and things like that. Do you still have some input into rugby while living in Australia?
Unfortunately, no. I guess, you know, the business and so forth, you know, it takes a lot of my time, obviously with kids. I did get called in to help out with my son's touch rugby team at high school, and it was tougher than I thought, to be honest. You know, it was just, I guess, with time and so forth, you know, you kind of just get lost. However, I am finding a little bit more time, you know, on my hands. So you never know. And you're right, grassroots is where it's at. You know, we talk about the fond memories of growing up in Petone and some of the kids you grew up with. And it was, you just felt, as they say, you belonged. And, you know, the game, that's where it all begins. Australia, yes, is definitely a challenging time for rugby union. And again, you know, and I think, you know, talking to rugby enthusiasts here and so forth, they all know it. They need to get back to the grassroots, and you know, and getting to the clubs, So I'm in Coogee in New South Wales. So the Randwick, the Galloping Greens are just down the road. So I'm like, I'm going to go join the club, support them. You know, obviously a few great names from the Wallabies days, you know, were members here. And, you know, I don't know if I can say this, but I'm starting to support the Wallabies. Is that a good thing?
Oh, it is. You're connected with your communities. That is a good thing.
Absolutely. So my son, you know, he's a Wallabies fan, and technically, I've had a couple of first cousins, you know, Rodney Black, Godzilla, who played, and then also, you know, Adam Coleman of recent, you know, both first cousins. So, and obviously, you know, we had Ben Afiaki run out in the All Black jersey a while ago. So if it goes on numbers, I should be twice as supportive for the Wallabies as I am for the All Blacks. But I don't think that's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, you know, you'll never lose your ties with Tonga too, with your two younger brothers representing Tonga. And, you know, we'll talk about how'd you end up playing for Hong Kong?
Oh, my goodness. You know, I guess every good story starts with, you know, with a guy following a girl because of love. You know what I mean?
That's how it always starts.
Oh, I tell you. So, you know, obviously my wife now, your friend back then, Selena, she had gotten a job in Hong Kong with Air New Zealand. After she finished her master's degree at Victoria, she got a job with Air New Zealand in Wellington. And she actually, her older sister was working in Hong Kong at the time. So she thought, oh, I'll just go over and see her, catch up for a bit of a holiday. And, you know, she was all excited. Anyway, she comes back. She's like, oh, I'm going to move to Hong Kong. I was like, that's strange. Oh, she loved it, absolutely loved it. And she then the next day she saw there was a job for in Air New Zealand based in Hong Kong. She applied for it and got it. And, you know, long story short, she left. I'm like, oh, my goodness, what's going on here? And lo and behold, I think about a month later, I was right behind her. Yeah.
Yeah, just keep going.
I bumped into a Tongan guy called Izzy Tuibai at the 1995 Singapore Cricket Club Sevens. And I bumped into him, introduced myself. I don't know how, but funnily enough, I thought he was Greek or looked like George Michael. And I got standing next to him and I said, oh, you're a pretty good player for a Greek guy. And he almost took my head off and he said, I'm Tongan, you whatever, beep, beep, beep. And I got on off with him there. He took me aside and we had a few drinks. Anyway, I get to Hong Kong and he's playing for the national team. And, you know, he had played for Tonga, played for North Harbour with Buck Shelford and all those guys. And he was in Hong Kong and he was a big superstar. So I got there and found out, oh, which club do you play for? Joined the Valley, the Mighty Valley there. And it was awesome. And there was a bunch of Kiwis there already, mainly from the Waikato, because George Simpkin was coaching them and he was there. And, you know, players like Vaughan Going were playing there, Izzy Tuivai, obviously, Dino Hirawini, all these Waikato players. Then I got there, Matty Phillips, who played for the New Zealand Colts, was there. Johnny Gordon, the younger brother of the boys that played for the All Blacks. Is it Steve Gordon?
Yeah, Steve.
And Johnny had played New Zealand Colts, I think, with Matty Phillips. So there was a whole bunch of rugby players there. And I was like, hang on, you know, this is a pretty good level. So, and it was great matches with a lot of Australian-based players. And it was just, the best way to get introduced to a new place. You know, you get to Hong Kong and the expat community is small and they're tight. Yeah, so they're just, everybody's very welcoming. You get on the field, you bash each other up, and then afterwards you're all out on the town, you know.
One chai.
Yeah, oh, jeepers, one chai, Leng Wai Fong. And, you know, to be honest, the plan was just to go there for a year or two and ended up being there 10 years. Oy. You know. I think I blended in with the locals. You know, you've been there. A lot of people were like, who is this guy? But, yeah, no, it was a good level of rugby. By the time I, got selected for Hong Kong, there was Phil Campbell. He played for Auckland on the wing. around the days of John Kerwin playing, and he played for the mighty Ponsonby Ponies, you know, and he reminded us a lot. But he was an amazing coach. And back then, Hong Kong had played in that Pacific Rim tournament with Japan, USA, and Canada. So, you know, it was a great level to play and a great tour, obviously, and getting, I think if you can get an international jersey, international cap, no matter where it was, and, you know, that was always the dream growing up. And I got there and I went, you know what, not a bad place to play rugby. And then get selected for Hong Kong and go on a tour and, you know, play international rugby. Great experience.
Well, it is, you know, and it's funny, the timing of our discussion really, and we're seeing, you know, Kiwi boys playing for Ireland and, you know, some are playing for France, you know, and just what's happening now with, you know, these local players from here in New Zealand or, you know, or wherever, you know, playing for other countries, which is what exactly as you said, they've got to take the opportunities out, I'm sure, in all things. And whether that's here or whether that's there or wherever, you take that opportunity to play at the top, at the highest level, don't you?
You love the game. You grow up loving the game. And you know, there's certain things that you know, as a player, you just want to experience. And you know, if someone had told me, hey, you know what, you're going to be an international rugby player in Hong Kong, I would have gone, what, can you come again? Well, what are you talking about? But you know, I grew up watching the Hong Kong Sevens on TV. Remember when that was on, and you just watched and you saw the atmosphere in the crowd, and it's still, you know, obviously not in the last couple of years, but it's still there. It's still amazing to be a part of. So, you know, you knew that it was there, but yeah, never in my wildest dreams would I have thought, oh yeah, I'll end up in Hong Kong and I'll run on as an international player. Yeah, did not think that.
Well, hey, look, I think you wouldn't have thought that you'd ever leave Wellington, and now. A bit like yourself, based in Auckland, and I'm kind of like chasing the sun now, as you get older.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, people used to ask me, I mean, grew up in Wellington and, you know, I'm, you know, in a little bit warmer, climate now. But, you know, people said, oh, how come you moved to Wellington? And I said, yeah, it's a thing called no choice. That's where your parents moved and that's where you went, you know. But I'm with you, chasing the body moves a little bit better in the warm weather. And, you know, we've got nothing to, you know, no one to blame other than our ancestors because that's where they lived. And our bodies are created for where our ancestors lived.
Absolutely. They were smart, weren't they?
Tell me about it. There's a lot that we can learn.
But it wasn't just rugby, you know, obviously, when you're in Hong Kong. And we'll talk about your business, because you've had a lot of successes. And can you just talk us through how that started as well, please?
Obviously grew up and, you know, talk about my family and my parents. And, you know, education was really important to my parents. And obviously being the eldest son, you know, there was, maybe a little bit of pressure to ensure that my education was up there. And obviously, you know, mum and dad's dream was to get to New Zealand, work hard, and put their kids through university. Yeah, that was their dream, even to the point where I still remember my dad sitting me down and telling me I've got to focus at college, you know, at St. Bernard's College. I need to, you know, School C was our, you know, the biggest exams that were coming up, and you know, those are the things. Luckily I had an older sister who was at Sacred Heart, and she's a few years older than me, and she was doing very well academically, and I thought, okay, at least I've got someone that I've got, you know, that I can learn off here. And so, you know, I had put I always loved playing rugby. I remember going to Hutt Valley reps trials, and I never made it, but there were some gun players in those years. I think you and Inoki, you know, were both in that team, and that was the start of your rep, you know, career. But you know, I kind of didn't focus on rugby solely because my dad made education so important, you know, and the big thing for us was getting the university degree. And you know, my sister had gone to Massey University in Palmerston North, and you know, I didn't choose to go there, but I found out about Pacific Island scholarships along the way, and I took a gap year after St. Bernard's College and worked at AMP Insurance for a year, and that's where I, you know, decided to focus on rugby. And our St. Bernard's 15 team, they moved to Hutt Valley Maris back in the day. It's you know, Huddle Boys Maris, and they won the Wellington school championship that year in 1988. So it was a really good team. Michael Robinson was the captain there, and we took the team to Hutt Valley Maris, and we did really well. And you know, me being that little second 15 player, that, you know, I was like, Dad's kind of, you know, I've done my education part, now I can focus on rugby. And I think that's where I kind of, you know, I made the Wellington 19s that year. And I think that was you got a taste of rep rugby, you know, and that was important for me. You know, you got a taste of it. You're like, oh yeah, this is pretty good. But then the following year, I got a scholarship to get to Massey University and do a business degree. Was big for me, you know, because I had told my dad that, no, I'll just work really hard and not worry about university. I've seen people be successful, you know, without needing a university degree. But after 1 year of working, I realized, whoa, okay, a lot of people are getting promoted at AMP Insurance, but they've all got degrees. Yeah. I went, okay, that's it. Didn't really have the finances to do that, and that's why the scholarship was so important. You know, getting up to Massey was a big one. You know, graduating was a big one for me because the success rate wasn't so high, you know, for Pacific Island students.
Especially back then, eh?
Yeah, exactly. So I took a year off playing rugby and focused on my papers, because if you didn't pass 50% of your papers, you lost the scholarship. So the focus was there. So passed my first year, you know, all seven papers. So I was like, okay, I can do this, you know. Learned the balance, study techniques became better. So I went back to playing rugby. And that was awesome because, you know, got into the Manawatu Colts that year, 91, and played against Wellington. Eddie Leslie was the coach. Marty was in there, you know, Michael Robinson, I think I was marking Sean Longstaff, who actually ended up playing for Scotland.
Yeah.
And he was awesome. Like, I was like, yeah, that was a long day in the office for me, I tell you. Big and fast. But it was great to play them. From memory, we won and that game. But you know, Alama was in the team, but he was injured. That's probably why we won.
we won't tell him that, eh?
Yeah, we won't. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, that was, you know, getting up there. And then, you know, I actually started playing rugby league a little bit more seriously at university. And that was, you know, that was big for me and absolutely loved it. But, you know, going back to, you know, graduated in 92, came back to Wellington. And I think that's where, you know, catching up with you and Monkey and probably afterwards, because I had played under James Lulawai for the Petone Rugby League team.
Yes.
And then obviously that Lion Red Cup competition came up and they had, you know, a year with under James Lulawai with the Wellington Dukes and, you know, Earl Vars and then, well, half the Wainuiu Māori rugby league team were in there, the Lomaxes and so forth. And, it was just awesome. And again, you know, going back to it was a real balance, the sporting side and the academics kind of worked hand in hand for me. I realized that if I took what I, you know, from sports, like the training side, you know, practice twice and then game day on Saturdays, I went, okay, that means I've got to really study, do my homework, you know. And if you do that well, then your exams are a little bit easier. You know what I mean? Mm. So I kind of figured out the balance between sporting and academics to actually graduate, which is a big one. And obviously, you know, for my parents, graduation day was a big one. And I was lucky enough that my sister came back and we did the same course, did the business degree, same time. And so we graduated at the same time as well. So, you know, anything with your siblings together is pretty awesome. And she'll tell you that if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't have passed, because I actually use a lot of the training notes.
I was just thinking that, eh? Okay. We all know from the earth, goodness grows. Victual, New Zealand's own health and wellbeing supplement range with native and Pacific ingredients. Visit victual.co.nz and take your first step to help your goodness grow. I remember yourself in Enoki. You know, you were there was this anomaly where you used to, Stanley was a little bit younger at that time, but Noki was still at uni. You'd just finished uni, and I was Pacific Islanders at uni, man. I'm not used to seeing you know, and playing rugby, you know, like for me, that was definitely, you know, my parents had the same wish yet. So I wasn't a good listener back then, you know. But, you know, in terms of what every parent does now, being a parent, you know, you want them to follow that model. Get your education, because, you know, I still remember you coming to trainings in your tie after working. All the rest of us were in our work boots or a t-shirt, or, you know, after coming from doing our labouring jobs. But, you know, and then it's not until you're in there, that kind of, we're in that room, I don't want my kids to go through this, you know. And you know, that's kind of my memory of you coming through that. And my question, Riley, is why business? Why did you want to get into business, you know?
A
business degree.
I mean, you look at, you know, college, what I was good at, and it kind of made sense. Not that I ever wanted to probably start a business, in all honesty, you know, and I was fortunate enough to have older cousins, you know, that, you know, actually a lot of them were lawyers that were based in Auckland. They were all, you know, Auckland, and they were just a few years older than me. So I kind of hung out with them in Auckland, you know, my cousin Kahu and Tabake Afiaki, and I had an auntie who, you know, had graduated from Victoria. So, you know, there was a lot of education, but it was all geared at accountants, lawyers, you know, and you know, like the islanders, those are the big jobs. And so I looked at a business thinking, hey, why not? And again, the scholarship was for business. So I guess my mind or choice was made up for me. But you know what? When I got into it and all the subjects, you know, marketing, management, accounting, law, it kind of, you know, it did grasp my interest. Obviously, the one that did grasp my interest the most was the information systems, as in IT. And that's what I ended up majoring in, was information systems. And it was very new, you know, show my age now, graduating in 1992 from Massey University in Palmerston North. And we were the first set of graduates at Massey University for information systems. So, you know, we're kind of trailblazers.
Pioneers.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, that probably was what got me into business, because, you know, it is a three-year degree. And if you weren't interested in it, you probably wouldn't have you know, graduated, you would have probably found a reason to pull out. And so, yeah, the IT side of it really got me interested. And especially because it was a pretty much a new industry in the early 90s for me. So, yeah, that interest, that's probably why and why I stuck to it.
Geez, yeah, well, you're right. Like you said, you're a pioneer into that industry, and obviously it's blown up, and it's, as everything does, it's moved now with technology. And, you know, we were just going through our technology issues.
Oh my goodness. So, apologies.
there's still a lot to learn, you know, when you got to Hong Kong, is that what you got into when you first arrived? Obviously, the playing wise and, you know, you got into the gyms there as well. You know, the starting of, you know, yourself and Selena's business. So can you talk us through that?
Yeah, no, as you asked, did I get into IT when I first got there? That was the plan. And, you know, luckily I had people that knew connections, because one thing I learned in Hong Kong very quickly, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And the rugby circles are very connected, and they also want to help you. That's why, you know, I think I was talking about the expat community there. Oh, what a community. And they just, they welcome you with open arms. And obviously, you know, when they arrived, they probably had the same treatment. So they, in turn, look after others. So when I got there, I got interviews. I was actually offered a job, and I thought, oh, my goodness, my dream job. Nike International. And, you know, I still remember getting in there, and their reception area was a half court. You know, and they had, you know, pictures of Michael Jordan around, and, you know, being a Michael Jordan fan, I was like, oh my goodness, this was it. And when they told me what I was going to be working on was all the Y2K testing. And I had just done that for the New Zealand, you know, internal affairs systems or passports and so forth. And I think that broke me. I think that was it. I'm done. I just said I respectfully declined the job. And I actually remember going down to the gym that Izzy Toiwai was working at and talking to him about, hey, what, you know, what's it like working in the gym and all that kind of stuff. And he kind of, you know, just said, oh, yeah, let's do this. And he said, you know, come and work for me. You'll be studying memberships and you got to work really hard. And I was like, as soon as he said selling, I went, I can't sell anything. I couldn't sell to save my life. I'm telling you, you got the wrong guy. And he kind of looked at me and said, what else can you do? I said, I might become a personal trainer. And then he goes, okay, not my department. And he sent me to see another guy who, you know, was a PT manager, and he was hiring and so forth. But he said, look, can't hire you unless you get your qualification. So that's when I did the ACE course, the American Council on Exercise, and got qualified. And I think 6 months later, got hired. And that's how I got into gyms, you know. So, yeah, that's how that started.
Well, from Nike and nearly your dream job to, but I don't want to do that, to, you know, a whole different change in in career path, you know. And so you started training at them, and then all of a sudden, you know, you were owning them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was a bit of a gap before owning them, and, you know, it was a hell of a ride. Jeepers, steep learning curve, that's for sure. And, you know, I remember, you know, starting up in the gyms, and still I'm not sold. I'm still like, hey, let's just give it a go, you know, because I had a couple of mates who were personal trainers at Les Mills in Wellington, and they looked like they, you know, they liked what they were doing, they were into it, and they were passionate. I was like, okay, you know, I'll see what it's about. But it was never this is it, this is what I'm going to do. I think the moment came when I had my first PT client that I actually got to achieve her goals. You know, she had her own issues in life, and obviously weight becomes a problem. Mm. And I helped her achieve her fitness goals. And I saw the change in her. I saw her life starting to, you know, to get better, and she was happier.
Mm.
I think that was the moment when I went, you know what? This is it. I found my calling. And I just did it for more people. I just, you know, got more clients on board. But it wasn't plain sailing. I think I almost got fired twice because they still needed you to sell. You know, sales was the name of the game. And I was like, okay, I don't think they're going to call me into the office a third time and give me good news. And I felt that I was a good trainer. I gave great service. The biggest thing was that I could not sell personal training.
Mm.
And I think it came from my upbringing. It was just hard to, you know, to ask for money, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just started going, okay, how can I fix this? And I remember asking, you know, the top personal trainer there. She was Chinese. She was an aerobics instructor. She was fit as an absolute superstar. And she was selling like $15,000 to $20,000 worth of PT US a month. Mm.
Oh,
that's how good she was. That's a lot of personal training.
Mm.
And so I just asked her for tips. I had to buy her lunch, you know, you got to be nice. And I think she gave me two or three tips. And I was like, okay, cool. And those two or three tips, that following month, I sold $20,000 worth of personal training in that month. And I just realized, okay, I can do this. I can actually, again, selling was still a new thing to me. But I had to flip it. I had to go, okay, how, as a Pacific Islander, grew up in New Zealand, how can I look at this in a way that'll make me want to sell more and be better at personal training? And I think it came because I actually had, funnily enough, a member complain about me that I didn't try selling PT to her. I was like, okay, this, I can't remember this. And then I remembered, yes, the gym had to be closed for a period of time, for a couple of hours. And I was in the middle of her PT presentation. And so I couldn't, you know, present a personal training package to her. She went and complained because two of her best friends I had as clients, and she was waiting for me. And I was, okay, let's sort out some personal training for me so you can be happy. And then I realized that the knowledge that I had was so useful to a lot of beginners. And that's what I got good at, was just showing people the benefits of having a personal trainer versus not having a personal trainer, you know, and it became that simple. So, you know, getting into personal training, learning that what I did was beneficial to others hugely, was the reason why I stay, and the reason why I'm still in this business today.
You talk about that, you know, our cultural backgrounds and trying to sell something for money, you know, is harder. Well, it's just doesn't sit right with us. It's funny, you know, like you get asked to do these things and you can get paid for them. Well, you know, take a photo, sign an autograph, or do it, you know, and I said, well, I just do that anyway. It's, you know, it's not hard.
Yeah.
And I feel funny if, you know, everyone wants to pay for it, or, you know, you charge people for those things. But it is the way of the world, and sometimes you're like, as you did, you know, you get outside that comfort zone and you have to do it because it's the business. Yeah. Everyone else is doing it, so why shouldn't we, or why can't I? And sometimes you've just got to get past that that initial, I've got to past, you know, the humility and, you know, that shyness to get out there. But it's hard. Again, you know, I'm going through that and hearing you talk about, you know, that issue, the same thing, and we know where it comes from, you know.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, that probably is an answer, or, you know, good question about getting into business as a Pacific person. because it is, you know, we've been brought up in the village kind of, you know, upbringing style, and we all know each other and we share things.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I guess we're just in bigger villages now. and, you know, to look at it from a business point of view, it's okay, whatever you're doing, whether it's a product, a service, whatever it is that your business is providing, it's you've got to believe that there's a value to it. And the value has to be so much more than the actual price you're paying for it. And that's kind of, you know, for me, it's good business sense, you know, and look at the value of what it is that you're providing. And the, you know, when that is so much more than what they're paying, it's that basic, but it can be that simple. Yeah. And it does, you know, kind of look at our specific ways and so forth. And I think there's things that you can do. But, you know, as a business, you know, there's things called profits. And, you know, if that's what it you require to grow or have more research into making your product better and so forth, you know, just ways to justify what that is. And, you know, you look at the business you're in, it's huge. You know, wellness is, it's growing and it's just going to get bigger. Look at what's happening in the world today. Everybody's talking about vaccinations and this and that and this. You don't hear much about people just looking after their body because, you know, there's bugs everywhere. I'm not going to get too deep into it. But there's a thing called an immune system. And, you know, we all know that the better our lifestyle, the stronger we are, the fitter we are, the healthier we are, your body has a better chance of surviving anything. You know what I mean? So it's...
Especially in this day and age, 2 hours, you know, with so many things going on, and as you said, you know, what's going around and happening around us every day, that, you know, returning to making sure that we ourselves are looking after our own health and well-being as a priority, you know, whereas sometimes it isn't. You know, some of us can't prioritize our own because we have to prioritize our families, you know, through going, you know, we're seeing it now, and, you know, in terms of those at the front line, you know, they have to work to protect not just themselves, but also provide. But they're doing that and sacrificing their own health. And, and that's something that I think, like you're saying, that, yeah, we do have to prioritise it. Our people, you know, even more so, you know, it's, looking at this pandemic that's happening, you know, our people are at the most at risk, you know, Māori, Polynesian, and, you know, the Indigenous people of this world. So, you know, there's a big education piece for that, and I know that's what obviously your line of work is as well. On that too, with yourself, you know, you've opened up in different countries, so, you know, I know what it's like opening in just New Zealand and what we have to deal with, but and the cultures as well. For you, how difficult was that? You know. Firstly, Hong Kong, now Australia, you know, getting into those countries and understand the culture, but also, you know, you've got different verifications and obviously guidelines that you're, you know, all the red tape.
Oh, I hear you. A great question. And being kind of, you know, resilient in a way. And you talk about it, going into different countries and, you know, I think you just have to go into one different country that you don't understand and understand, and you'll learn. There'll be, you know, there's steps along the way. And I'll take it back to, you know, my upbringing, and you're the same. We were Pacifica living in, you know, in New Zealand. And I remember coming over at the age of 7 and just thinking, oh, it's another part of Tonga. And everyone can understand my Tongan. It was funny, I told an auntie that I thought English was this Tongan, but you just chuck an S on the end. And I was, I don't know. Again, I don't know where I got that from. But we figured out. We kind of figured out a way, and we became, you know, kind of Kiwi, really, you know. So fast forward, I get to Hong Kong and just get there. And, you know, I think that you just learn. You get there, you have a respect for their culture. Mm. You have a respect that it is a different world. I think probably in business, you know, one of my learnings, very quick learning, was, you know, I've been in Hong Kong, maybe 4 or 5 years. And I'd been a successful general manager for this gym chain, mm. California Fitness. And there was a brand new gym that they'd opened in Taipei, in Taiwan. And before I tell you about that, I was quite famous because I got there and lo and behold, there was a ton of Umanga fan club. In our gyms, they were like, do you know Tana? And I said, yeah, I think I told Minoka this. And, you know, I told everyone, yeah, Tana and I are close. You know? And so I was made famous because of that. So you got fans in Taipei.
Oh, awesome.
And I got there and I took all my learnings from Hong Kong because, you know, I'd been there for a while and I was going, you know, they don't speak Cantonese, but they speak Mandarin, but I'm sure they have the same, you know, work ethics and so mm-hmm. forth. And, oh, my goodness, I learned real quick. No, they were different people.
Yeah.
My Hong Kong teams were motivated highly by money. So if you wanted, you know, them to work hard, there was always that, you know, cash. You just put up a cash prize and they worked twice as hard. Did that in Taipei and just didn't know what was going on. Nobody picked up phones. Nobody wanted to take more tours. And I was like, okay, this is new. And I learned very quickly that they were more chilled, more relaxed. They wanted two-hour lunches. They wanted two-day weekends, whereas in Hong Kong, Sunday was your only day off, you know. And so I was like, okay, now we're talking. So as soon as I figured that out, changed the way I managed, changed the way I motivated them, it's working.
Mm.
And so from that, whenever we moved, and especially coming to Australia, that was a learning. Get there, get a lay of the land, figure them out. Even though it was closer to New Zealand, very different. And either, you know mm-hmm. that, and you know, in your travels, and so it was every single time I went into a new place, it was like steep learning curve. Be a sponge. Listen, what motivates people? What gets people? What will make these people work harder? And then you figure out a way of getting what you need, hitting goals, solutions, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's a big one. It's a big one.
It's so good to hear you say that, because that's, you know, sometimes it's the model. You just come in, this model worked here. I'm coming. Yeah. I'm just going to put that on top of this now. And I want that. And if it's not working, it's not it's not the model's fault. It's the people around. Whereas, you know, again, I'm going to integrate. I'm going to learn. I'm going to listen. You know, what's the lay of the land here? And then let's work out a plan that works and suits where I am, you know. And that's leadership, you know, as you say, that resilience you said right at the start. I think that's a big thing that I'm learning from you know, rugby people have learnt or sports people and then gone into business, because you are going to take some hard learnings sometimes, and you know, you're going to have to, you know, suck it up and that didn't work, but got to keep pushing forward. Hey,
absolutely. And I think, you know, the one thing that I've learned in business is that there's never a straight line. You know, to get from A to B.
Why didn't you tell me that before, mate?
I did message you, you as did. Soon as I saw that, and I said, you're going to learn a lot, you know, about, you know, a lot of the skills that you had as a rugby player and as a coach, you're going to take into business. And, you know, I'm not going to tell you too much, but you got my number. Yeah. You can send it through.
That's why we're talking, mate.
Oh, exactly. And you go back to rugby, sometimes you've got to go backwards to go forward, you know. And rugby, you can lose a game but still win the championship, you know. So there's all those analogies, there's all those learnings from playing rugby that you take into the business world, and that's what it's all about. And you know, I saw a quote the other day which was really cool, and you know, it went like something like this. It went, you know, everybody, you know, dreams of living on the mountaintop, but people don't realize that the growth and the enjoyment comes from climbing it.
Mm.
You know, and that was from Andy Rooney. And you're right, you know, that is, you know, the end of the day, humans, as humans, that's our dream. When we get there, that's when I'm going to be happy.
Mm.
When I get that job, that's when I get that car, when I get that house. No, it's in the struggle. You know what I mean? Mm. Enjoy that. And there's, yeah. you know, obviously many sayings from very wise people mm. that have gone before us and, you know, and passing on wisdom. But, you know, there is and that business, you will find that enjoy the journey. And your business will grow, you know, and you'll grow as a person as well.
Oh, look. So now I must be 8 foot tall now because I'm growing so much.
Yeah, I'm sure you were 6'8" when you were playing.
I was 5 foot, now I'm 8 foot. I'm growing too fast, mate. Doing too many learnings. Going backwards too much. You know, so what brought you to Australia from, you know, you had a lot of success in Hong Kong, like you say, with your gyms mm. and the way you'd moved forward there. What brought you to Aussie?
Oh, yeah, good question. And, you know, Hong Kong, we didn't leave Hong Kong because we didn't enjoy it. Great lifestyle. And we loved it. And you've been there and seen some of the boys that still haven't left. They're still there and they're, you know, those movie stars and so forth.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't leave because of that. And it was a, you know, we were still enjoying the lifestyle and, you know, still a lot of good friends and family back there. To answer your question, I guess, you know, our firstborn, Saya, he's, you know, our boy was born in Hong Kong. And when he was 3 months old, he was diagnosed with cerebral palsy.
Hmm.
And, you know, I didn't know what cerebral palsy was. I think I'd heard about it. And, you know, we had to deal with that. And that was huge for Selena and myself.
Hmm.
And as a parent, you know, I think any good parent will be like, okay, what do I have to do for my child to give them, you know, a bright future, you know, the brightest future that you can give them. And that probably got us to start thinking, okay, where do we have to be for our son to, you know, we were told that he wouldn't be able to walk or talk and go to special needs schools. And I think that's where, you know, we just had to start looking and start trying to find some answers. And, you know, your career and your lifestyle, they take second.
Mm.
You know, you just, that's not as important anymore. And so we found a course, and it was actually in Auckland for him. Conductive education was the course, and it was from some part of Europe. And you know, we came back and put him in that course for 6 months, and the changes were unbelievable. You know, just we saw him being able to use his right side, because he's, you know, hemiplegic on right side, so his fine motor skills aren't as good. And then, you know, lo and behold, we did some more research, and they had the same course in Sydney, Australia. And course in Sydney.
Sydney.
Yeah. Mm. And, you know, we started thinking about setting up the business. Obviously, looked at Auckland, New Zealand. Population was not as big as we wanted, you know, coming from Hong Kong. Everything is quiet and small and not enough people. Mm. And we had been to Sydney on holidays to see family and friends, and we really enjoyed it. And so we were like, okay, maybe Sydney's the place to go. So we got here in 2006, August the 4th. I still remember the day because it was 8 degrees. And we had been living in the Cook Islands for a few months. And we're like, stop holy, it. Yeah, no, 8 degrees. All right, I think we made the wrong decision. Especially after living in Hong Kong with 30 degrees and, you know, walking around in shorts. But I guess that was just, you know, the thing, you know, the arrival, hello, we're here. Sydney doesn't get that cold, you know, 8 degrees. So, you know, leaving Hong Kong was purely a, for us, a family, a family reason. And but we look back now and, oh, it was probably the best thing, you know. I mean, I know I can hand on heart say now, it was the best thing for our family. And, yeah, son's 18 in a couple of weeks, and he's finishing up high school, and he's he can walk and he can run. He's actually a pretty good football player, and he wants to go to the Paralympics. And he was a head, you know, he was prefect and house of captain, and you know, it's amazing, you know, what happens when you just give these kids a place where they can, you know, they can shine.
Yeah, well, you've just done what exactly, like you say, you could be on a certain trajectory and then all of a sudden, you know, family, you know, you do what you do for family. That's the reason why, you know, we do what we do, isn't it? And and then, you know, you make these little detours. You know, as you said, it's, you know, climbing that face of that mountain to get to the top. It's never on a direct line. Yeah, you have to get over some, you know, some craggy rocks and things like that. So. And but what you've achieved for it as well, you know, from taking those little detours, or you know, just to, to get to Sydney, and then you know, look, what you said about your son and the future's bright, and but then obviously you also, you know, in Sydney you were the, you opened the first UFC gym in Sydney, you know, 2013. Being a big UFC fan, you know, I didn't remember seeing that. I was going, oh, come on. And I was thinking, shucks, has he got into UFC now too?
Oh, yeah, that was a hell of a ride. And, you know, again, connected back to our business partner who we used to work for in Asia. And, you know, he came and bought the gyms that we were working in, and then grew that line of gyms in Asia. But he had his own line of gyms in the US. You know, I think it was 550 gyms that they had in the US. And, you know, we'd worked for him. And then we partnered with him to open our first gym in Sydney. And that was no brand. It was Selena and myself had come up with a, you know, a model for this gym. And it was called V Club. And it had, we had our own language. And to be just in a, you know, long story short, we went and had a look at the lay of the land. Obviously, there was a lot of fitness centers around. But what came to us was that we felt women were being hard done by. You know, there were gyms made by men for men, and women, like, come and join and do something over there. You know what I mean? And we're like, okay, we're going to create something where women are going to feel comfortable. We'll still let men in. That's okay. All the smart men will join, you know. And it, we started it with Mark and then grew that. Then Mark Mastroff is his name, and, you know, he's our business partner, and I'll call him a mentor and a good friend. Been in the game a lot. He sold his company to Walmart in the US for $1.65 billion US dollars in 2005. And so, you know, he did all right. And so, you know, he didn't do much. I think it was a couple of years. And then he started, you know, re-looking at what we're doing. He bought Crunch Fitness from in New York, and that's that connection. And the UFC gym came about because, from what I know, Dana White was one of his boxing instructors in one of his, or could have been more, in the gyms that he had in Las Vegas. And they just kept in touch, you know, they just kept in touch. And, you know, when UFC became huge, Dana, I mean, Mark would go to all the UFC fights, you know, before they, you know, became that big. And then they got talking, and UFC gym came about. And, you know, I was going to the US back and forth, and I saw the first one open in San Francisco and went and had a look, and I was just, I really liked it. I mean, the values, you look at the values, you know what I mean? Honor, you know, courage, respect. And that resonates, you know, with me. But also the sport, you know, you look at rugby, you know, there's that physicality to it. But, and I know you like it, but there's that respect factor as well. And, you know, and you can be a black belt, but you can still get tapped out by a white belt. You know what I mean? If you, you know, so there was all that. And so my partner was, you know, obviously back then wanted to get UFC gym worldwide. And, you know, we had a talk, we had a look, and he wanted obviously someone he trusted to be the first ones to open it internationally and take the learnings from does this brand, UFC gym, have legs to get out there. So we opened the first one, I think, Jesus, 2012. My memory, everything's going a bit. And we opened a big box. So a big box, you're looking at about, you know, 3,500 square meters. And that's a big gym. In the US, they were like 4,000 square meters, but real estate is different in the US versus Australia. So we made it happen. We opened a 3,200 square meter gym, Alexandria, just out of the CBD by the airport. And it was awesome, you know. We had fun. What a ride. I think, you know, the staff enjoyed it. And we showed our business partner that it can be done. It can be done. And now I think in China, they're going into India. They're obvious here in Australia. We decided in Australia here to consolidate, and we moved away from the UFC gym. And so another group bought the rights, but they opened what we call the small box, a smaller version. And so you'll see that's happening in Australia. We decided to, you know, we had Madonna's brand, Hard Candy Fitness, here as well. And that was fun. You know, Madonna's she's an amazing entertainer. Oh my goodness, yeah. But you know, we made a call probably about 5 years ago to just get Crunch. Crunch was the brand that we felt we could grow in Australia faster, and it's shown. So we're up to 18 clubs now. And you know, we're still only in two states, so there's definitely room for growth. Yeah,
just on that, geez, look, you know, making tough decisions like that, you know, it's hard. How did you come about that decision? Like you say, UFC is a massive brand. You had, I think, Hard Candy, as you said, with again massive brand, and then you go away. Actually, no, we're going to go. You know, someone like me who takes 10 days to make a decision on, you know, what socks to wear. I'm a person that looks at everything. I'm so adverse to risk. You know, that's where I struggled when I first came into business. My wife would be, what do you think about this? Because this decision was meant to be made yesterday, and now you're still taking 2 days. You know, so for yourself, who's, you know, how do you do that? You know, like, what are the key things that you need to make those hard decisions?
Yeah, making hard decisions. And you, in business, you're gonna find that a lot. You know, as a warning, and you probably already found out. But I take it all the way back to when you get started. There's a reason. Yeah. And we call it our North Star. You know, what's your North Star? And, you know, when you've got your North Star, you know, people talk about mission statements, you know, vision statements and values, and, you know, some call it pillars and so forth. You always take it back to that, because, you know, before you start the business, there's a reason, there's a why, you know, and obviously passion is in there. And along the way in your business career, you got to make decisions. And there's a lot of decision making, you know, daily, but there's some major ones. So what Selena and I have learned about our business is that we always take it back. If there's one that we're like, I don't know. Okay, let's go back to our North Star. Why did we get started? What is the main purpose of this business? And then that makes your decision making easier. Because when you know, and they say integrity is the only path that you will never get lost on. You know what I mean? So you stay the path. And it's worked for us so far, you know, and there are, you know, there's your day-to-day decisions. Mm. There's some major ones that we've like had to make and was actually probably detrimental to our progress.
Mm.
And, but we always knew that, hey, that short-term gain, and they say it could be long-term pain. Mm. We don't want to go there. Let's go back. There's our North Star. We know our values. We know who we are. We know what we are. We know what our pillars are. And if you stick to that, whatever your decision that has to be made, you'll find that your, you know, hard decisions become easy.
You made it sound too easy.
It was like our math teacher.
I reckon.
Can you go back up and get that one?
And obviously, you're like you're in the gym industry. It's tough times at the moment with COVID, yeah. You know. So how has COVID affected you? Obviously, it's affected you. And how have you been able to, you know, get on top of that now? And because Sydney's just come out of lockdown, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's been huge to many an industry, and especially ours. You know. I have a feeling, you know, we got targeted a little bit unfairly when it first hit.
Mm.
It was almost like, oh, we know where people sweat. It's at the gym. That's where you're going to get it. And we're like, oh, hang on. Nothing's been proven yet. There's no facts. However, we were in the firing line straight away. You know, having said that, and I've got to be, you know, impartial, I've got to be kind of fair and not to be one-sided. To answer your question, it's impacted us greatly.
Yeah.
And I think we're not the only industry that has been hit. How have we fared? I'll be honest with you, I think, and a lot of people say, if your business was solid before the lockdowns, you're going to come through the other end. Probably a bit battered, a little bit beaten up, yeah. But you've got to be, you know, you're going to be okay. However, between the lockdowns, one thing, and again, I think that comes with great leadership, and I'm not talking about myself because Celine is the CEO and, you know, I'm the assistant. she's been amazing because there were still things that we can do during the lockdown that impacted our business, you know, talking with landlords, you know, talking with our, you know, suppliers and all that kind of stuff. We actually opened 3 gyms during the lockdown period.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we couldn't open them, but they were, like, there, ready to be open, brand new, everything. And so there were a lot of learnings. Yeah, you learn about shipping. You learn about, you know, funnily enough, Cristiano Ronaldo has actually got the rights for Crunch Fitness in Spain and Portugal. And so I'm telling you the story because we had to divert some of his equipment into one of our gyms because it just happened that way. Hopefully he doesn't hear this and go, hey, is that where my equipment went?
But if he hears it, that means he's listening to my podcast. So
there you go. It's a good thing. It's always a positive.
So I think you're safe. I think you're safe.
Oh, you never know. But yeah, it's there was a lot of learnings, and so we were still quite active as a senior team, and staying connected was a massive lesson for us. You know, you had your team, and you know, with the clubs, you know, we've got a team of about 1,000. And so, you know, that's made up of employees, you know, 300 or 400, and you've got your personal trainers, and then you've got your, I think it's like 500 instructors that, you know, do all our classes. So there was a whole range of people, and trying to stay connected with them was our main goal. And that worked well, you know, especially with social media these days and having them. But we definitely learned a lot in this. The impact is huge, but again, you know, leaders, true leaders step up when the rough waters show up or the, you know, the tough times turn up. And I'm glad to say that, you know, you know, there was a lot of podcasts listened to. There was a lot, of course, with our mentors, our business partners in the US. And that's the thing, they went into lockdown 4 weeks before Sydney on the first one. So there was a lot of learnings that we took from the US that we, you know, put into effect in Sydney to great effect, in all honesty. And that's one thing about business is learning from your mentors, learning from others.
Well, I think, like you say, you know, and asking those questions too, you know, you're never out there alone. And obviously, like you said, if they're going through it, you don't want to go through the same and make the same mistakes. You know, it's can't let, your ego or anything get in front of you because, you know, it's otherwise you save yourself some pain. That's what I'm learning.
And that's what it's about, you know, wisdom. You know, there's a couple of ways you can learn through your own mistakes or someone's wisdom that's gone through it, you know. Yeah, 100%. And that's a lot better way to learn, I tell you. And especially in business, it actually saves you on money too and time.
Oh, no, we've learned that. We're learning that, I should say. Yeah. So in terms of that, you know, you've been through some tough times and, you know, obviously still uncertain times with, you know, the current climate of the way we're living at the moment. How do you look after yourselves, you know, your own mental mental well-being and obviously your health?
Oh, wow. Where do I start? I guess we're in that industry, looking after yourself. First and foremost, I listen to my wife. we've gotten to the age, you know, we turned 50, 51 in a few months.
Oh, my goodness.
And,
did you say 21? You
know, yeah, I wish. Yeah. No, I'd still be making mistakes back then. it's kind of like, the way we train, the way we eat, the way we recover there's differences. Yep. And as a rugby player going through your career, you know, as you age, recovery was a lot longer, you know, injuries didn't heal as fast. And that's the same with the body. First and foremost, you know, spiritually, you know, I'm a follower of Jesus Christ, and you've got to get right with yourself inside. You know what I mean? Your thoughts and, you know, a lot of people don't realize they impact your health. Mm. So, you know, there's that thing of being right, you know, being at peace with the world. First and foremost, regular exercise is, you know, I definitely practice what I preach. But I do things that I enjoy. I'm still struggling at the game of golf, but I'm still going, and that's a good one. We have a dog that we walk, you know, a couple of times a day. We have our, you know, gym here at home that, you know, we use, and we change, you know. Adaptation, as they say, is the enemy to, you know, to health. Mm. And, you know, we do our workouts. And, you know, one thing that's grown a lot is, the online, you know, training. You've got instructors or personal trainers or coaches that will take you through a program. Mm. And we're finding, you know, programs, especially if you've heard of the biohackers, you know, biohacking your body to betterness. So some of the things, you know, we do is the, you know, the breathing techniques, you know, cold showers, the, you know, grounding, and even looking at your sleep, all those things and hacking them to be better at it. Obviously food, what we eat is key. And a type of meats that you eat. We've done it. We've done everything. And when you get to my age, you got to just be a little bit more careful and look at those kind of things. But I do have to say, you know, being healthy and living healthy is a passion, and we look forward to, you know, to new things coming out and trying them.
So what does the future hold for for yourself and Selena and Crunch Fitness?
Oh yeah, good question. I mean, our North Star, it's been one of our values and is growth.
Mm.
And you know, I take it back to, you know, when I first got into the industry and I first saw the life that I changed and for the better. I probably have to say that the passion that I had from that moment is probably still alive and kicking in me.
Mm.
But you know, we want to touch more people. We want to get health and fitness achievable and available to more of the population. I think, and don't quote me just on this, but Australia may have got to 18% of the population have a gym membership.
18.
I think when we got here it was 8.
Oh my goodness.
So everybody thinks, oh, gyms are everywhere. Everybody's joined a gym. No, there's still a lot of work to do when it comes to that. So, you know, that is our future. Growing this brand is a big one. And I talk about a platform. You know, this is a platform that we use, you know, and our purpose is probably wider ranging. In the fact that I think what we love about this industry is we get to help others.
Mm.
We get to help others improve themselves. And, you know, I think that's come from the way we were brought up as Pacific Islanders, you know, that village feel. We all help, you know, others. We serve others that we feel are not as fortunate as ourselves. And so, you know, you go back to, okay, what is your purpose, Rich? I have a platform called Crunch Fitness Australia that I can grow. Is that part of your purpose? 100%. That's part of it. I have a son who has cerebral palsy, who's learning to navigate through this world. And, you know, we've helped them so far. But you know what? There's many others that have had the same journey but may not have had the same resources, you know. Especially you look at our Pacific nations and you look at the islands, you know, my wife's from the Cook Islands, so we've already started helping with, you know, those with disabilities back there. And we're like, hang on, there's Tonga, there's Samoa, there's Fiji, there's all these other smaller islands.
Mm.
Can our journey and the resources we have, can we help those people, you know, back in the islands? So that's another, you know, part of the future that we, you know, haven't got around to yet. But with all the things that are happening now, I think it may be a bit of a fast forward button on those things. But yeah, growth, helping others, getting the message of looking after yourself is definitely in amongst it.
Well, that's awesome, Wilson. I think, you know, you're leading the way in terms of, you know, what, like you said, you and Selena are doing in terms of business as well as, you know, helping with those disabilities. You know, there's another quote, you know, you're sending the elevator back down and, you know, to pave that way forward for everyone. And I think also, I think we've talked about it, you know, like ourselves, you know, being first generation, children of, you know, the first migrants that come over here.
Mm.
You know, we know how hard our parents worked to provide for us.
Yeah.
And we learned that now we want to provide for, you know, our own, but it's also providing for others and opening those pathways so that, you know, like, it's not just giving, you know, that I love the quote, give a man a fish, feed him for a day, teach a man a fish, you know, feed himself for the rest of his life, you know, along those lines. And that's sometimes, like, I find myself giving the fish because I think that's easier and I think that's what is one. And it calms down a lot of complaints in my household. I just give the fish. Just give the fish.
That's classic. But
teaching those lessons are you said go through the struggle. This is because that's where you get your growth. That's where you get the learning. And, you know, once you've gone through a bit of struggle, you realize, actually, I don't want to feel that again. So I know not to go down that path. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, I think that's just great to hear. And I think, like, you know, we all get on. We want to help as much as we can. And again, as you see, that's that village mentality of where we're from. And it's probably like every culture, they want an element of help there, you know. Mm. I think finally for us was, you know, what do you think are the three, in your eyes, are the three key messages that you'd want to give someone that wants to follow your pathway, as I am following you, into the business world and to be, you know, and try and get that success? And
I guess, you know, everyone, we all have a story. We all have a journey that, you know, and this is probably why I'm doing this, because I was told once that your story doesn't belong to you. It's for you to share in the hope of inspiring others. And so, you know, I go back to my story and you know, we talked about my purpose before. Everything that you look, if you reflect back on, you know, your what country you came from, where you grew up, who are your family, your friends, sports, everything else, all that, if you look at it, will tell you what your purpose is in this life. And so, you know, talking to somebody who wants to follow this path of business, first and foremost, you know, there's got to be that passion for what it is that you're doing, because that passion will get you through the difficult times. You know, I used to tell, you know, people, I call it the too hard line. And it goes to sports as well, because if you want to be great at anything, you've got to push past that too hard line. And you may have seen it in your rugby career, where you can see talent. That you can see this person can get there. You'll probably wear the black jersey. But there's that line where people get to and they just don't have that maybe courage or willpower to push through. And then they go, oh, hang on, I'm going to be good at that. That's where I'm going to be great.
Mm.
And they go there and they try it, and then they come up to the same too hard line. And I think that's where the passion comes through, because passion comes from, you know, from Christ, and he was willing to die for his people. Yeah. And so once you push past and you see that, where, you know, you push through the pain barrier, you did the hard work, and all of a sudden you're in a black jersey.
Mm.
And people are like, how did you do that? Well, you know, hard work.
Mm.
It's called hard work. And I always say that's the only ingredient that you can't leave out of success. And that's what I always say to people, is like, the only time success comes before work is in the dictionary. Yeah. And I never read the dictionary. No, just kidding. but yeah, that passion definitely has to be there for that. The next thing for me, and I'd speak about my journey, is I work for somebody that was, you know, probably a leader, definitely a leader in that field.
Mm.
And I learned a lot along the way. And I can safely say that whatever I did, whatever my role was in that company, I did to the best of my ability, you know. And, you know, a bit like rugby, you just go, okay, how am I going to get the spot on the starting team? What's my job description? What do I have to do? And so, you know, I learned a lot in my 10 years of working for him. I think he was. Myself, it was like, okay, that's pretty big. Learning about the business that you are in is key, and probably that learning has to be continual. So I'm glad to say that my business partner is my mentor, and all the years of experience, so let's say decades of experience of his gyms around the world, I can tap into at any, you know, just call, ask, and he'll probably send me stuff that, you know, sometimes they just send it to you because they know that you need it, you know. And then I think we talked about it before, and I think, you know, when you start, have a good business plan, yeah, Know who you are. Know what you are. Have your North Star. Have your pillars. Have your values set. Because, as we said, because you'll need them when the road gets bumpy. You need them when you're, you know, this decision will mean that we can make this much. But hang on. No. That if you do that, that goes away from your values. That goes away from what you were about and who you are. And you know that that's so pullback. So, you know, knowing exactly what you're, you know, having a good business plan, knowing what you are doing, who you are, what you do, because you don't want to get lost when you're in business. I think I'll round it down to that. And, she'll probably kill me if I don't say this. Have a really good business partner. That is my wife, Selena, who, you know, we work really well together for some reason. Some people said, I don't know if you can work with your wife. And someone did ask, and I just said, the only thing is you've got to be clear with what your responsibilities are. This is what you're in charge of, and this is what I'm in charge of. Boom. And then just know that there will be sometimes some robust dialogue between you two, but have a solution.
Oh, thank you for that. I think out of all of this, that's what I wanted to hear.
Yeah, I thought so.
Well, yeah, I think it was, there's a boss. I know where I stand. Make your cup of coffee. Shh.
Yeah. Speak when you're spoken to.
I really appreciate your time, Luch, and you know, so many great learnings from there, and yeah, that road, the North Star, just making sure of you know where you're heading, and I think that's probably something that I think it's been happening quickly, obviously, with now our current where we are at the moment in the world, you know, things are changing all the time, and so. Well, you say you got to still be strong in the values and you know, you're the direction we want to head. So I really appreciate that, Wilson. Yeah, appreciate your time.
You're very, very welcome. And again, wish you all the best. And we're still cheering for you from Sydney, brother.
Lafakus and
Malo.
Yeah, we'll catch up.
Okay. So fast with four.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to check out Victual's website at www.victual.co.nz so you can rebalance your lifestyle with ancient wisdom and ingredients.